Hi, it's Alistair at Electric Scotland. I thought I'd do a little video to help you through this coronavirus situation. Essentially, if you go to electricscotland.com, you'll actually find a whole ton of great stuff to keep you amused, educated. You can learn all kinds of things. There's tons of stuff for the kids to do. I thought I'd just go through a few things that I thought maybe you might like to get involved in. First thing I will say is the kids, because, you know, I'm hearing a whole lot about kids having to be homeschooled now, and a lot of parents don't know how to do that and having all kinds of issues and problems with it. Well, if you go to electricscotland.com, you'll find a kids section. If you click the kids menu, you'll see there that the sections we've got in there are games, which are usually the ones that we've put up ourselves. I mean, like, for example, we do have a tremendous amount of jigsaw puzzles, and they're good for winding away a few hours of your time. And of course, the nice thing about our jigsaw puzzles is you can make them easier or harder. So you can make them simply like 8 pieces to fill in the picture. That's for the young kids. Or you could do 32 or more, or 64 pieces to make it harder and more challenging. So, you know, lots of options there. We also got this, obviously we've got 800 children's stories. Whole ton of them there. Margot Fallis wrote a lot of them, but we've got all kinds of other ones there. We've also got Scottish Stories for Young Readers. It was written by Mrs. Blackford in the mid-1800s. These are some really good old stories. And we've got fairy tales and ghost stories, and other children's stories from other authors that we've been sent in over the years. We've also got A Highland Cottage. It's an old story for juveniles, published between 1809 and 1821. And if you want some audio, we've got children's poems and stories from the Scots Independent newspaper. Because many years ago, when Peter Wright was the chairman of it, he and his wife Marlin wanted to record some of the old Scots language that we had in Scotland. And so they made a point of reading a whole load of stories so that we would get into the habit of listening to the old Scots. And then we have the Odum Children's Library. This is a library which puts out a collection of fun things to do for young children. It's got such things as colouring pages, craft ideas, books, etc. Hamish the Haggis stories, a good famous Scottish haggis, so you can learn all about Hamish the Haggis and all his adventures that he got up to. We've got a wee card trick for you, a bit of fun. I've got colouring pictures. These are black and white pictures where kids can print out in colour with crayons for lots of fun. We've got crafts and cooking for kids' corner, games to play offline, which is probably good because, you know, the internet can be quite slow for some people, so this is a way of getting games to play. We've got Entertainments for Home, Church and School by Frederick Steger. That's an e-text as it happens, but I came across it and I thought it had a lot of great stuff in it, so you might want to explore that. And then for kids that are having problems with arithmetic, we've got an Introduction to Arithmetic. It's the 100th and first edition by James Gray. So, you know, if you've got 101st edition, it's got to be popular and it's got to be good. So, if you're having problems with it, use that. And then we've got the Globe Readers. These are 5 books that were compiled by Professor Murison when he was Master of English at the Grammar School in Aberdeen. They were intended to teach the English language, spelling and grammar, and also to educate the children on nature, history, geography and science. So, you know, a lot of good stuff there. We've got an education page where you can find loads of places for helping you with your exams and other educational advice. Nursery rhymes, you know, for the wee ones. We've got games and diversions of Argyllshire Lass. This is compiled by Robert Craig McClacken, MD. Here you can learn what games children played before 1900 and perhaps tell them yourselves. And by the way, just because I'm coughing doesn't mean to say I've got coronavirus, it just means I've got a smoker's cough. I've also got Growing Scotland, which is gardening contributes to the Scottish Executive Agenda to improve the nation's well-being. And on that subject, what I'd like to encourage you to do is have a look at our agriculture and wildlife section. When you click on that, the first link you've got there is agriculture. And by clicking on that, you can find a whole ton of things in there. But in particular, and I'm just clicking on it now, that you'll find as you go down the page, I think it's about halfway down, you'll see Crofting Agriculture. Well, I'd encourage you to look at that, because not only do we have lots of videos on that page, but we've also got a tremendous amount of great advice. For example, this Fraser Darling, who wrote in 1945, he wrote about crofting. Says basically agriculture in the crofts, the islands and West Highland presents special problems. In this book, Dr. Fraser Darling explains the principles of putting land into good heart and of growing crops which suit the difficult climate and conditions. There's no one better qualified to do this than Dr. Fraser Darling, who has first-hand experience and a great sympathy with the crofters' problems. Now, I have to say to you, that he was, when I read his book, and I read the whole thing, it's really, really good, but when I read this book, he was commenting on the fact that a lot of the clan chiefs and landlords had kicked their tenants off their properties. That's what you had about the Highland clearances and stuff like that. And what he essentially said is, unfortunately, these landlords and clan chiefs were rather stupid. Because he said, if you read this book, you'll learn how to run a croft efficiently and well. And he said, if they had bothered to give them practical advice and assistance to convert their croft to the right way of running it, he said they would have made far more money than putting sheep on the land. Because he maintains a well-run croft can easily pay the rent that the landlord and the clan chief wanted. And not only that, it could feed themselves well for the whole year. Plus, on top of all that, make them some extra cash money for which they could buy things. I mean, that's what we all want. And so he's gone through this, and if you read the whole book, I think you'll learn a lot from it. But the thing about this is that I've got a lot of old crofting videos on the site as well. Like, you know, Crofting Boy in 1955. That's an interesting one. In fact, they're all interesting. I've got Crofters done in 1944. And I've got the Corncrick and the Croft. This was a 1977 BBC Bristol production for the World About Us series. It captures the vanishing world of crofting in the Outer Hebrides. It's written and narrated by Finlay J. MacDonald and filmed and directed by Alan McGregor with help from the RSPB film unit. MacDonald, a native Gaelic speaker, was from the nearby island of Harris. So, you know, and it's quite a lengthy one, that one. It's good. We've got Living in a Croft in 1986. It's a rough-cut version of a 1960 or 86 documentary, which was filmed for the BBC Children's series. Let's see. It looked at everyday life in the community of Ness in the Isle of Lewis, Scotland, the villages of Europe, Fivepenny, Port of Ness, Lionel, Habest, Swanhost and North Dell are shown. There's quite a lengthy preface to the book, but I think you want to read that though, just to get an idea of what's going on. I've also got another video which is Power to the Pococks. It's a year in the life of a family living off-grid, basically. I've got Crofters, another 1944 showing life on the in the islands. Edisgay, A Poem of Remote Lives. This is 1934, so it's a really old picture, that one. And then you can go through all the contents. I mean, for example, chapter one is the soil. What is good heart? The soil is a sponge, a balanced soil, cultivation and the unseen life of the soil, the value of lime, forms of lime, the principles of ploughing and the subsoil. And then like chapter two goes on to plant foods, the work of phosphates in the soil, forms of phosphate manures, the place of potato in plant growth, or potash rather than plant growth, manuring with nitrogen, the application of nitrogen and farmyard manure. And then he goes on to the management of grass, the conservation of winter fodder, control of weeds, planning for the spring work, growing early potatoes, the problem of shelter, the crofter's cow, the principles of feeding animals, the crofter's sheep, agricultural arithmetic. And, you know, I've got another link to another one about crofts and farms in the Hebrides. But then I've got a newer one, which is Crofting New Voices. This is just a few years ago it was put out. It's about a 15-minute video. And then what I did at the end, I mean, I've given you lots of links to various crofting associations and all over the place. But I also found another video, which is The Last Crofter in Lassie. So it's filmed with my father-in-law, Malcolm MacLeod of Laxey, Isle of Lewis. His nickname, Shade Aird, is a childhood abbreviation of his name in Gaelic. Malcolm, son of Angus, son of Alistair. The film was made by John Murdo MacDonald. And again, that's I watched that, it's good. And then I say I've got a couple more of them. And then right at the very bottom, I've got some links for you to have a wee look at. Let me just refresh that. Yeah, it's YouTube series you might enjoy. It's because obviously you're looking for things to watch and on television. But if you go to the, I've got like Luna Acres is one that I enjoy. I actually subscribe to them, so every time they put a new video out, I get notified about it. I've got The Farmhouse, Simple Living Alaska. And that Simple Living Alaska is brilliant. It's a husband and wife team. And they've bought this small, I don't know if it mentions up there how big it is, but no, it doesn't state how big it is. I think it's only about 5 acres, something like that. It's not huge. But the thing is, she is really, really good at explaining how to do raised beds in the garden to grow potatoes and various other vegetables. And if you watch it from the start, you'll see the first year how they really put up a polytunnel, but also did outside growing, and she was preparing the soil and did really well with it, did the seeds and everything. And then you see them harvesting the first year's crop, and it was massive, massive. And they're hoping to do even better this year. So again, we're coming into the time of year when she's already starting to pot the little seeds and stuff to get them to grow before putting them out. So I would, if you really, and I mean, they're not using, I would imagine it's maybe I don't know, it looks to me like it might be like 50 yards by maybe 100 yards or something, roughly that in size. And out of that, they're getting phenomenal crops. And of course, they've got chickens as well, which is good. So, you know, I think you should have a wee look at that because it's really good. And they're showing you how to cook things as well. And then My Self-Reliance is another one I've watched for a few years, really, now. He's a guy that bought some land in Northern Ontario. And he's basically, he's showing him building a log cabin. But this year, he's going to be doing, he's put a little bit of a test garden in last year, just to see what might grow. But of course, since the coronavirus has happened, he realizes he must be far more proactive. And so he's making a major point this year of doing a proper garden. And he's done one before, another property he had many years ago. So he knows what he's doing. And so it'll be interesting to see him breaking ground and seeing how he develops his garden this year. And then I have another one called Hickory Ridge. I like the guy's attitude. He's pretty much on his own. He's building this huge homestead, basically. So it's called Hickory Ridge Homestead. And finally, I've got Country View Acres, which is a guy's purchased 41 acres in southern Illinois. And it's preparing the land to be our future homestead. So these are all, I mean, again, the Country View Acres is a husband and wife. Hickory Ridge Homestead is, so far it's only him, although I think he may be married with kids. I'm not totally certain on that, but he mentioned something which made me think that. My Self-Reliance, he's really been on his own, but his wife has now joined him full time in the cabin. And he's got two daughters of university, college age, and they're staying with him for a short time during this coronavirus situation. So, and apparently his youngest daughter has expressed a real interest in learning to do everything that her father does. So he said, that's awesome. So he's looking forward to teaching her. So hopefully we'll see the female members of his family becoming more prominent. Because at the moment, he seems to be very scared of showing his wife at all, other than her hands or occasionally a quick glimpse of her face, but from afar, she can't really see what she looks like or anything. And she's not really participating, but the indications are that she will participate more. So I'm hoping, because frankly, I think, you know, if you're living your own, fine, but most people want to do it as a family unit. And I think it's good to get the family's point of view on things. So I'm hoping my Self-Reliance will get better, because I think he's having some issues at the moment there about how to bring in his family or not to bring them in. A bit conflicted there, I think. But anyway, the whole thing about that is there's tons to read on the site if you're interested in doing a wee bit of home plot or a bit of gardening and stuff. And I say, I do have tons of stuff up. I mean, like, I've got another book which was, I'd read the whole thing again, it's 10 acres enough. It was a guy that had a metalworking business, and he wasn't doing that well in it. Some years he would make a good, reasonable profit, others years he wouldn't. And on balance, he was doing okay, but a lot of worries in his business, and he decided that he wanted to pack it all in, and he sold the business and bought this 10 acres. And he'd done a huge amount of research, and he figured he could make a better living on 10 acres than he could running his existing business. And also he was looking at these ranches that are not 10 acres but 1,000 acres, and he reckoned that he could actually do better on just 10 acres. And of course on that basis you could do quite well on even 5 acres. So I thought it was a really interesting book, and it was quite interesting the way he did it. Again, soil was the major thing. If you got good soil, and you could develop good soil from bad soil, you know, and it shows you how he did it. So, I mean, it's just a ton of stuff to read in, just in the agricultural section alone. And so, I will say that a lot of people over the years have told me that I put far too much up and they don't have the time to read what I put up. And of course, I've been doing this full time for, I don't know, over 20 years for sure. So that's about all I do during the day is read and research and find stuff that I think would be interesting. But if you're into poetry at all, I've got a phenomenal poetry section. And a lot of individuals, readers to the site, have sent in some of their own poems. So we've got a really good collection of stuff there. Then we've got Beth's Family Tree. Beth used to print, it was the Moulton Library Family Tree newspaper, and it was the leading Scottish ethnic newspaper in the States. She got about, I think she got almost a million readers coming through. But the library decided that it wasn't their remit to do a Scottish thing anymore, and so they decided to close it down. I don't think it made a huge profit for the library, so I think they just thought, well, it's a lot of work, and Beth has to do it full time, and they're having to pay her to do it. So I think they thought they could save a bit of money, and so they decided to close it. But Beth, obviously being invested in it for so many years, wouldn't let go, and so she's kept it going as a PDF publication, and it's called Beth's Newfangled Family Tree, as I've given the full title. Although on the site you'll see it just says Beth's Family Tree. But again, we've got years worth of our PDFs up there, so tons to read, and there's always lots of great articles in there. And then another one I might highlight is Donna's page. Donna is a matriarch of the Ponca Indian tribe in Colorado, and she's quite a character, and she's done a lot of research in her own history. And she's got Scots in her ancestry as well, the Bell family apparently. But she's written a lot about Indian life and culture as well. And so she's got a lot of fascinating stories on that. And then there's John's page, which was John Henderson, who died a couple of years back. He was a retired English teacher from Scotland and retired to Cyprus. And he started to send me, because he did his own poems in the doggerel, Doric language of North Aberdeen. And so he sent in some English versions of poems as well. But he used to do a lot of genealogy and research, so he'd often find a really interesting book and recommend I put it up, and he would give a bit of an overview of it, and tidy it up a bit and stuff like that, and then send it in to me for putting up the website. And he gave a bit of a history of his own family up to a certain age with his kids, but when he got to a certain point, the kids said, "Hey, Dad, I don't want you to start spreading any more information about us, so can you maybe stop at this point, you know? I mean, go on privately, but for public use, we prefer you stop it there." So that's what we did. So it only went up to a certain time period, but anyway. And then we've got culture and language, and if you look at Scottish folklore, we've got a whole ton of information in Scottish folklore. You'll love that stuff if you get into it and start reading some of it. And then of course we've got a huge section on religion on the site, and this is maybe a good time because the churches are shutting down, or have shut down, and so we can't go to church service anymore. And as it happens, I'm working with another visitor to the site. She's from North Carolina. And we're putting Norman MacLeod's Home Preacher series up. His idea of doing this was so that every Sunday you could take this text for that week and use it as a basis for giving a service in your own home. That's if you couldn't get to church. So clearly that's a good time to use that, use those texts that he put out. And Norman MacLeod, he was a chaplain to Queen Victoria, but he's also written several other books of great interest, and I have a lot of them up on the website. In fact, I've got a whole biography of him on the website. So if you just go Norman MacLeod on the site using the site search engine, you'll find the various books he's written. Some of them are actually marvellous. So I say this, we've also got songs. So if you want to have a bit of a sing song, some old good old Scottish songs. Again, this was John Henderson that did it, created this session, because he loved music. And so I think I'm just, we have numbered them. He's got, he had 129. I Love to Wear the Kilt, it was the last one he did, huh? That's 129. If you click on any of those, where you get up is you get a page with the words of the music. But there's a link which will play you the actual song being sung. So you can listen to being sung while you read the words, because obviously the song comes up in a new window. So you can kind of minimize it to listen to it while reading along with the words. So it's a good way to learn the ones. So, I mean, certainly the Muckin' of George's Byre is one I always enjoy. You know, it's the Muckin' of George's Byre. Oh, him of the Suther was having the end, clackmuckin' the muckin' of here the den. Even the miracle had to grin at the Muckin' of George's Byre. So, you know, I mean, it's, but that was Andy Stewart. And we've got a few of his options up there. So, you know, I mean, again, it's a great trove of great information. And I've also got a video up of Shove Your Granny by the Singing Kettle. It's a kids' program, really, but it's that one about shoving your granny off a bus, you know. So, all in all, I think you can also go to our Famous Scots section, where you can obviously read a lot about our well, what I did was, the Famous Scots section actually came from a book. It was, I think if I remember right, it was 5 volumes in total, 4 initially with the 5th one added. It came from the Biographical Dictionary of Eminent Scotsmen. It was originally edited by Robert Chalmers, and then new edition along with the supplemental volume says by the Reverend Thomas Thompson. Now what I've done is, over the years, since, because I put it up many, many years ago now, but since putting it up, I've actually found full biographies that have been written about a lot of the people in there. So where that's happened, I've given you a link on the biography page to read the whole book. And some of them are brilliant. I mean, one guy I hadn't heard about was Robert Dollar, who was born in Falkirk and became a great shipping magnate, especially in America, where he settled eventually. He was in Canada for a while, then settled in America. And he had many ships running under the American flag. And he talks about his life and how he developed things. And, you know, and of course, he talks a lot about China and Japan, because he opened up the China and Japanese trade for America. He really did a fantastic job for America, until America shot themselves in the foot. And he explains about doing that, but after listening to him and realizing that they virtually destroyed the American shipping business, you know, they obviously cancelled that laws that they put in force, and things became good again. So, you know, it's just that there's a whole ton of information about fantastic people. Of all walks of life, you know. So I love biographies, because I think it just teaches you so much. And then if you go to our Scots Diaspora section, you'll find in the Scots Diaspora section itself, you'll find a lot about Scots Americans, Scots Australians, Scots Canadians. You know, it's just that it's... I think that the thing about the Scots diaspora is that there's so many people that left Scotland and made their lives overseas. And so we'd read about those people that are born in Scotland, went to and settled in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, Russia, all over Europe, tons of places. But then the next generation were born over there, and some of them did amazing things as well. That's why we have so many American presidents of Scots and Scots-Irish descent. And I might add, don't forget that while this is a Scottish site, it's also a Scots-Irish site, because the Scots-Irish are really Scots. They went from Scotland and settled in Ireland for a couple of centuries, maybe. And then when they went to America, they became known as Scots-Irish, or as we call them at home, Ulster Scots. So I have a lot of good history up about the Scots-Irish in America, and also, you know, the Scots-Irish everywhere, really. But, and I've also got a big history of Ulster up on the site as well. And that's another thing. I've got a lot of great book, whole books on histories of places in Scotland, all the major cities, a lot of the significant towns and the areas of Scotland. One thing you can do is on the index page of the site, if you scroll down just a little, you'll see that I've got check out our Scottish Council pages. Well, if you click on that, you'll get a list of the council areas. And for example, if I'm just looking at this now, if I click on Aberdeenshire, for example, I go to a page where it lists a lot of books that we've had, like New Statistical Account of Scotland. But it's for the area of Aberdeen, and it's 1845. I've got the Merchant of Crabcools, History of the Aberdeen Incorporated Trades. I've got Banffshire, the History of Fettercairn. Our Ainfolk, being memories of man's life in the Mearns, and A Crack About Old Times by James Ingalls. History of Loch Kinnaird, History of Aberdeen and Banff, History of the Parish and Borough of Lawrencekirk, Parish of Marytown, Aberdeenshire Epitaphs and Inscriptions, Wanderings in the Highlands of Banff and Aberdeenshires. And then we've got a lot of Scottish Gazetteer entries and some extra links to the Aberdeen Council website, the Google map for Aberdeenshire, and newspapers in the area, links to those. So all in all, I'm pretty pleased with that section. I think I could probably have added a lot more to it. It's like I've added certain places but forgot about the council pages. So it's just sometimes I remember, oh yeah, I'll have to put that in the council page. But at least it gets you all started. I mean, if you click on Moray, for example, I've got main books on Lossiemouth, Elgin, History of Moray and Nairn, Banffshire, A Sportsman and Naturalist Tour in Sutherlandshire. So that's in Moray. And so all I'm really getting at is, if you want some recipes to cook, because you've got time to cook now, go to our food and drink section. You're there, you'll find great Scottish recipes. And certainly I've got there the famous Clootey dumpling. If you've ever made a dumpling, you need to make it at least once. It's a bit messy, but by golly, it's brilliant. And I made that recipe, it came out brilliantly. Although the amount of cleaning up I had, I was inclined not to do it in the future. But and it tells you what the clootie is. It's a linen cloth, basically, that you pour them in and you tie a knot, leave a bit of a gap, and put in boiling water and boil it for a couple of hours. And I say a nice thing about clootie dumpling is you can just eat it, have a slice and eat it, or you can dust it with some sugar, or you could put butter on it, or you can have it hot with custard, or you can have it with bacon and eggs, you know, in the morning for breakfast. Very versatile, tons of fruit in it, lovely. So, and of course, naturally, we've got a whole ton of clans and families. I mean, there's a huge amount of clans and families, so well worth having a look in that section to see what your clan connections are. And don't forget that when you use a site search engine, whenever you click on that, I give you a little bit of advice at the top about some tips on using a site search engine. Because, for example, if you're looking for Gray, the surname Gray, is it spelled G-R-A-Y or G-R-E-Y? And of course, it's a colour. And so, you know, when you do a search for that kind of name, you're going to get inundated. You might get 1,000 links to look at. And of course, a lot of them have nothing to do with the family, to do with the colour. But one of the ways around that, I suggest that you use case-sensitive search and put a capital G in, because usually grey is an adjective, so being a colour, so it's going to be in lowercase. So you put a capital G in, then that can usually get you the name, or at least it'll cut out a whole load of the non-family names, basically, that way. And I give you a few hints about how you might do some searches. It's like the Mac name. You know, you can do ? There could be INTYRE, so you'll get MACMC and M apostrophe with that kind of search. So, I'm trying to give you tips that will help you, essentially. Having got these tips, it's like word stemming. So word stemming is used to match multiple forms of word to a single query term. For example, when stemming is on, the word use, U-S-E, would also match used and using. And the word run would match runs and running. So word stemming is language dependent and is not available for all languages. If you want only exact matches, select none from the advanced menu to turn word stemming to none. For example, I was looking for the island of Tyree, and so just entered Tyree into the search, and I found 5,445 items, including words such as tired, tire, tires plural, tiring, and so when I turned scanning off, it found just 362 items, which is a huge difference when you're having to go through a lot of links. So that took you from over 5,000 down to just 362. So, I try to help where I can there. And as I say, obviously I've got a huge Robert Burns section, as you would imagine, but I've also got a tremendous Scots Regiment section. So if you're in the Army, Navy, Air Force and all that kind of stuff, I've got tons of information and tons of great biographies of some of the major generals and stuff like that in history. So all in all, there's more than enough there to keep you going for several weeks, months, years even, It just depends what you're personally interested in. We have a cultural section as well, which you can have fun with. But I would say that when you're looking at culture and language, there's the Scots language itself, but we've got sing-a-sang at least, which is some 300 songs. Scotland has a wealth of song. Angus McGilvery, the Rebel Kelly songbook, has served as an excellent introduction to that richness for visitors to Flag in the Wind, as well as paying a small tribute to his memory. Angus liked nothing better than a song, a dram or two, and a crack with his many friends. Flag in the Wind cannot supply a dram, but we can continue delving into the wealth of Scottish song. Angus would have liked that. So there we go. We've got Scottish food traditions and customs, known as some great Scottish recipes, with some great wee stories to go along with them. Culloden, that famous Culloden, I visited there and took a lot of pictures. I got Scottish quotations, a Burns collection. It's never early to plan ahead for your next, or indeed first, Burns supper. And the intention of this feature is to give you a really accessible collection of the nation's bards material for the 25th of January each year. Then we got Working Life of an MSP, that's Linda Fabiani. She's still in the Scottish Government today, so that's quite interesting. We've got Scott Witt, which is Scottish Jokes, and then SI's Burnt Supper. Here we offer you an hour's listening pleasure to a traditional burnt supper. Then some obituaries, the Oliver Brown Award, Rebel Kelly Songbook, Tartan Day Celebrations, the Athelstaneford Saltire, that's a newsletter of the Scottish Flag Trust, Unveiling of the Man of Butte Memorial Stone, So all in all, as I say, there's something for everyone in here, and I think it's well worth you just having a wee browse through. But as I say, remember, if you learn that your founders came from Ochtermachty or something like that, then search for Ochtermachty and you'll probably already have a book about Ochtermachty on the site. Or certainly we'll have information on Ochtermachty for sure. But if not, if you click on our gazetteer, we have a complete A to Z of the towns, and if you just navigate to the letter A, and then you can work your way through it, because we've got, I've scanned it all in, so if you look for the AUs, just looking down here, oh, here we go, we got Och in. Let's start with A-U-C-H. Ochterdern, Ochtermachty, there we go. It's on page 89. So if you click that, you'll get Ochtermachty coming up. And, yep. So if you were reading it, you could send Upper Land of the Wild Sow, that's what it's meant to be. A town and a parish of Northwest Fife. The town is divided by the Lower Spool, a tiny affluent of the Eden, into two nearly equal portions, and has a station on the Fife and Kinnan section of the North British Railway, 10 1/4 miles northeast of Kinross, 33 3/4 east northeast of Stirling, etc., etc., etc. It was a royal borough in 1517 and confirmed in its rights in 1595, but it ceased to return a member to Parliament sometime before the Union. And becoming bankrupt in 1816, it suffered the sequestration of all its corporation properties except townhouse, jail, steeple, bell and customs. Governed by a provost, two baileys, a treasurer and a procurator fiscal, town clerk and 8 councillors. I'd share a small debt courts. It's quite informative, really, when you go through it all and learn all about it. So, you know, the gazette, and that gazetteer, by the way, is the edition that the head librarian of St. Andrews University at the time, anyway, I don't suppose he's still there now, but he was the one that actually recommended I got that and told me where I could buy it if I went now. And it was actually the second-hand bookshop, which was just up from the 18th green at the St. Andrews Old Course. It was the road you went down to get to the putting green. And when you went down, it's on the left-hand side, big shop. Went in there, I said, I'm told you've got a copy off. And they said, yes, we have. I said, I want to buy it. I said, okay, and I think it was £120 or something. But I bought it, and then I scanned the whole thing in. Took ages, I have to say, ages. But nevertheless, I think it was good. So that's what I did. So as I say, it's just that if you read our general histories as well, you know, I mean, you're kind of view of Scotland. You can pick small histories. You can pick big 6-9 volume histories of Scotland if you really want to get into it. Although a lot of us don't have the time for that, so you might want to read more single volume ones. I mean, pick what you want to learn. We've got a nice section on tartans, and we've got travel and trivia, and there's videos that I've put up, and always what's news on the bottom right, and that'll always tell you what I've put up in the last 3 or 4 weeks on the site, so you can always see. So if you come at least once a month, you can go to the what's new, and that'll tell you what I've put up. So there you go. I won't go on any longer, but it was just to say that during this coronavirus situation, you know, a lot of people say they don't know what to do with themselves. I mean, certainly if you can read and you watch videos, I mean, there are tons of videos all over the site. Because if I've got a place, I try and find a YouTube video. Unfortunately, you will find some YouTube videos don't work any longer because the people delete them or take them off the site or they stop their account for some reason. And as soon as you do that, that video disappears, no longer available. What I usually say is go to YouTube and type in the title of the video that was destroyed, because you might find it, because it might be uploaded again under a different name or something, so it might still be there. If you can't find it, you'll probably find something else which is similar, you know? But that's the only thing. It'd be nice if YouTube would just email you to say, sorry, this has been taken down and is no longer available. Then I could immediately go in and edit it and take it off the page or search for a replacement, you know? But they don't advise you, so you only know you've lost a video if you go to a page where it doesn't display anymore. So anyway, there we go. Hope you keep safe. Remember, there's distancing. Keep at least 6 feet between you and everyone else. Wash your hands a number of times. Wash them well. You see, 20 to 30 seconds a time. And as I say, I'm sure we'll all come out of this one way or another. Because at the end of the day, if you do get it, and there's no guarantee you're going to get it, but if you do get it, a lot of people survive. In fact, the vast majority survive. I think 98% are surviving so far. That's a pretty good odds, you know. So anyway, I hope you guys take care, stay safe, and look forward to talking to you again sometime. Thanks.